Good morrow, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. And sorry, this is a late one if you're one of those early birds who looks and thinks, is it up? I usually get it up by 9 o'clock. Excuse the words there, but it is the, what are we today, the 13th, 14th, 15th? I don't know. It's a funny old time at the moment. I'm just looking. We're off to Scotland soon. Must be the 15th. There we are, Monday the 15th, just for that. And the sun is shining. It's windy, though, very windy at the moment, which is a bit of a blow. However, there we are. What can I say? Can't say very much, really. So it's, what is it? A Monday, beginning of the week, and I've already done my video. I've done it the wrong way round, or different way round, and that is to say I have done the video first and then the Naked Englishman second. So there you go. Sorry about that. But anyway, here it is. Now, I have a router, and I was supposed to have done this over the weekend, but I suddenly got very, very busy with other things over the weekend. And I need to see if this is going to work, or by how much it's going to work, because I want to tell BT, thank you very much, but you have been not as nice as you could be. You've lied to me, and it's goodbye. And I know that's probably a week or two away when all of that happened, and you know, sometimes things take a little bit longer, but there's no, I'm not in a great rush, but I am wanting to get it done so I can save some money like most people. So I've got this router here, which I'm going to open up, hopefully. Just trying to work out how to get in the blooming thing. And it comes, you buy a card, a SIM card. It comes with a SIM card. Why can't I get into this? It's one of those strange boxes that is, oh, I see. It's all right when you find the correct flap. And once you've got the correct flap, you can get in there. So I'm just getting in there now. And so it's the size of a sort of a paperback, really, I would describe it. It's white, and at the back it's got ports where you can plug in. You see, I have all my stuff, what do you call it, I have my stuff wired. There is how thrilling. I have a bloody American, well, they never told me that. It's got an American plug with the adapter, so that's no good. Straight away, that's a pain. Although, I have, I'm just trying to think, I have got an adapter, so I'm going to need an adapter. Well, that is a real swine. Although, of course, all I need really do is just cut the wire. I could plug it straight in. My dad and I, when I was a kid, my dad used to, if he didn't have a plug, he just used to poke the wires into the socket and then use another plug to plug it in. But then they changed the sockets. If you notice now on plugs, they are not fully, the bit that goes in the socket are only half done. It's a sort of safety measure to stop you from putting wires in. So that's a real pain. I wonder what the voltage in this is then. It must be, I'm just looking to see. I assume it will work. The output voltage, output is 12 volts. So I'm just wondering if you, what's that? There's wires and there's a couple of bit aerials in here. These aerials screw onto the top of the thing somewhere. Oh, here. So that, now the only thing about this is it's more bloody, I mean, you're getting the Wi-Fi in there, but then it's pumping out, oh, it's receiving the Wi-Fi. You're not pumping out any more Wi-Fi. Whether you might do, you might be pumping out more Wi-Fi. This is what I'm trying not to do, you see. We don't want to have too many EMFs in here. But that's a bit of a bugger. Now, I do know that somewhere I have an adapter, but I've probably got to nip into town and get another one, because I'm probably not going to be able to find the adapter. So that's a pain, isn't it? I wish I'd done that before. I could have gone down and got one. It's just a two-pin, like a shaver's adapter. So I suppose that's not an American thing. It's just... sometimes you can ram them in into the plug, into the socket. I have done that before. But have I got a shaver's adapter? I thought it was an American one, but I don't think it's an American one. I think it's just a... Well, it might be. Who knows? It's a real... That's foxed me a little bit, because I wasn't expecting that. It ought to say on it, really, what the power system is, but it's a 12-volt thing. Sorry, I'm trying to get it all back in the box now so I can close the sodding lid. The frustrations! It's one of those frustrating days today. As you know, we're buying the land. I did a video about that. How did this go in the box before? This does not fit together. Sorry about this. That does not physically go in. How did it... I took it out. I can't see how that went in. Must have been a bit like that. Anyway, I forced it in. He's forced it in. Right, so that's a job I can't do until I got an appropriate adapter. Oh, there's all these bits of other card that should have been in it, but are not in it. Never mind, whatever. It's crazy. So now I just trying to think, where would I have one? I don't know. I've got to get little, you know, those little shaving adapters. I think Robert Dias has probably got one. Otherwise, I'll have to go online and get one ordered, which is, again, that just puts you back, doesn't it? Hey-ho, never mind. There you go. Riding on a donkey. So, yes, that was a bit frustrating. Thank you very much for joining me for that. Yes. So we're trying to get on the land and do what we do. But, of course, we're still waiting for the solicitors. They love to drag their heels. And you daren't email them and chivvy them up. Because they then, you know, if you said, can you tell me how it's going? And then they'll email you and say, yeah, no problem. We'll email you. There's no news. £100 just to write the email, you know, or £250. Whatever it costs them to write a letter and say, oh, well, we'll send you a letter then. And all you've done is, you know, you've instructed us to email you. Well, that's a paid service, isn't it? And you go, yeah, great. Thanks for that. Just to tell me nothing is happening. So in the end, you're better off just not saying anything, really. There you are. I've got a book here. Talking of land, it just suddenly caught my eye. I bought this some while ago, and I can't remember if it was one of those books I found a bit frustrating. But maybe one should revisit it. It's called This Land is Our Land by Marion Sheward. And it's The Struggle for Britain's Countryside. Now, I did read it some time ago, and I think I got about halfway through, and I felt, oh, I'm not too sure about this. So let's have a look and see what she says in the introduction, because that gives us an idea, really. This was printed in the 1987. I think first printed, I'm just trying to gather. Although, yes, the first edition, 1987. So some time ago, people were worrying about this. And it says here in the preface, This Land is Our Land was written in 1987 to map the battleground and explore the prospects for what then looked likely to be a growing conflict between Britain's rural landowners and the landless majority. It went out of print in 1996, yet I explain... Sorry, the sun is blinding me. I explain in the introduction to this new edition the conflict it described had swollen in the intervening decade to become ever more a prominent feature of life in Britain. The reissue of this book is hopefully timed to aid those anxious to know what lies beneath the emerging debates such as those on hunting, access to the countryside, absentee ownership, and the conversation of disappearing landscape and wildlife habitat. Conservation, that's what I was trying to say. I believe it still provides the context for a growing land struggle in Britain and a sense of its past, present and possible future. Now, this is very interesting. Where's the original? I tell you why this is interesting, because people seem to think that people can own land. Now, how do you own anything? Are you saying you own it because it's become into your possession? You might possess something. That's a different thing, isn't it? If you possess something, I possess this. Ah, but is it yours? You may be holding it. You may be looking after it. You may be the custodian of it. But is it yours? And the question here is, well, no. If you didn't make something, how can it be yours? Or you can purchase something and you've bought what? The rights to it. You've bought the license of it. You've bought it so it's your property. But how do you get something that was never anyone's property to begin with? And I'm talking about land, of course. And land cannot be owned because nobody's got a receipt from the originator of that land. Now, again, this comes back to the whole business of the Bible, and I'm sorry to throw this at you, but we know that the government and the king of this country, of this land mass called Britain, they want an authority over the masses to say this is why we are in charge. And they have to prove that they've got this authority, so they go to a higher authority to say, I am, you know, a representative of the people. And here, you know, and who is the highest authority? Well, they say it's God. This is them saying it. They agree to it because the king takes an oath to God to keep up the customs and traditions. The queen did it and subsequent one. So they say there is this higher authority from which we get our authority from. And we see that. The judges take an oath to God. The MPs take an oath to the king, who took an oath to God. And so this is all evidenced. And of course, when the king is coronated, he is given a book, the Bible, as his rule book. Now, people think that that's just, well, ancient tradition. It's just, you know, it's there for pomp and circumstance and all of that, and it's meaningless. But it isn't. It's absolutely the most significant thing. We've been shown, taught to think that this is not an important thing. So they take their position from God, and so they then say, well, you know, we've got God's, I've taken an oath to God to protect the people and blah, blah, blah. So if God is the higher authority, in the Bible it says God created the earth. Well, if God created the earth, now, it doesn't matter whether you and I believe in God, whether we call it the universe, whether we call it the higher self or the ultimate source or the source or the creator, whatever it is, we just encapsulate all those various names and just for the sake of argument, we just call it God, okay? Just for this argument that I'm putting forward. So if God created the, and in the Bible, that's the Bible, the book of law, that the king accepts as his authority and his guide or his book of rules that he and that everything else is done to. So he's saying, yeah, God is right. And what it says in the Bible is right. It doesn't matter whether you believe in God, as I say. So in the Bible, their book of rules, remember, it says God created the earth. So God created the earth. God owns the earth. It's his. We're just visitors. We come, we go, we live, we die. Simple as. So nobody can own anything And if you notice, the government can own, and land registry particularly, can only offer you title deeds. They'll give you the title to something. Well, a title is nothing. It's just a bit of paper, isn't it? You can call anything a bit a title. I call this bit of land plot 407, for example. It's a title. That's all it is. It's a bit of paper with your with a legal fiction's name on it. It's not the land, and we've proved that. Anyway, so this land is our land, and it talks about landowners. They're not landowners. They are land possessors. Anyway, I'm just curious. I don't want to keep you too long because I've got things to do. This is from chapter 2 in this book. I just want to read this bit and see what it says. In Britain today, the idea that the land surface should be regarded as the private property of those who happen to own it, and it's got own in inverted commas, comes so naturally that alternative arrangements are hard to conceive. Well, exactly. Do you see? This is what I'm saying. But it need not be so, and it was not always. The present disposition of our land is the outcome of a struggle between those who have sought to own and those they have hereby deposed. Our present arrangements can only be followed in the light of the twists and turns of this long and eventful story. But the story does not just serve to explain our present difficulties, it also points the way to their resolution. Well, let's see. The dawn of man is the next bit in this. It says, early Stone Age man was a hunter and food gatherer, a way of life that would have lent itself to a relaxed pattern of land ownership. However, we have no way of knowing what arrangements, if any, actually prevailed, for it is not until the Roman conquest that the first written records appear in Britain. Pollen records indicate that the British environment was being manipulated to enhance food production 4,000 years before the Romans arrived, but no one knows on what basis this prehistoric agriculture was conducted. So, surviving archaeological features give the faintest of clues. Neolithic relics like the speculative causeway enclosures on Dorset's Hambledon Hill, the large burial mounds to be found on several of England's southern downland hills, or the huge monuments of Avebury and Stonehenge could not have been constructed by one family group. They must have been the result of a collective effort of a large number of people, and it may be that those entombed under the burial mounds, or long barrows as they're known, those numbers could have represented only a small proportion of the Neolithic communities of the southern England, represented a upper tier, as it were, of Neolithic society. And it may be that the henge monuments were centres of political power as well as shrines for religious events, but we shall probably never know. After about 1500 BC, however, no more of these giant public monuments seem to have been erected. Instead, there is evidence of small farming settlements apparently tilled by peasant farmers living in small groups or as family units. Yet, when we examine the pattern of their fields, we do not always find a hodgepodge of individual fields appearing to have been worked by one individual or family operating independently. Instead, sites from Sussex to the west of Ireland have revealed whole networks of fields sharing common axial lines that often ignore topographical features and cover, in some cases, thousands of acres, networks which could only be the product of the careful organisation of large numbers of people in a cohesive society. What we can say about this, or about any other period of prehistory, is that organisation was controlled by an individual leader or an oligarchy in an elected assembly or something else. Its chiefs existed in the early part of the second millennium BC. It may be that 500 years on, they had been overthrown by the peasant farmers on whom they depended. Or it may be that their energies were being channeled into practical land management instead of the more ostentatious ostentatious, if I can say the word, activity of earlier years. If Stone Age man's attitudes to land ownership are a mystery, those of the late Bronze Age and the Iron Age are a little clearer, because in those periods a new class of large structures appear that have largely defensive functions, unlike the earlier causeways enclosures of henge monuments. These hill forts, with their up to over 50 acres in area, bespeak not only of concentrated communal effort, but also territorial attitudes. And excavations at one of the best-known Iron Age sites in England, a four-acre enclosure at Little Woodbury near Salisbury, suggest that the form of social order involved was stratified rather than egalitarian. Within the quarter of a mile perimeter of the site, there is ample space for 30 small modern houses and their gardens. What has been found, however, are the remains of single large round houses 45 feet across in the middle of its own enclosure. Comparison with other sites elsewhere has led archaeologists to suggest that the large house with the Little Woodbury enclosure belonged to a member of the Iron Age aristocracy. Well, anyway, I won't read all of that because it goes on a bit and time is precious. But you can see from what they're saying there from the early times that, yes, you know, even if you don't take the Bible's idea, which is very much a latter idea, I suppose, in human history, because did the Iron Age people have a Bible? I don't suppose they did. But they did have an attitude to the land, and perhaps they didn't see the land in the same way as we do today, that it is owned by landowners. If you were just hunter-gatherers, you were hunting and you were wandering around, and perhaps nobody owned any land because the ownership of the land wasn't a thing that you needed to worry about, because you needed to stray along or move along so you could continually see where the animals are going, follow the animals and then just hunt them when you need them, grab the berries when you need them, because settling down and farming back then was not a thing. But the moment you started to sort of put your roots down, quite literally, and you needed to stay in one area, and you might say, well, I better carve out this area to be mine, you then immediately started to say, I'm now owning this. And that's an interesting thing, because, again, who says so? You're just claiming it. But perhaps in those days, you know, there were fewer people, it didn't overly matter, and small holdings and what have you meant that you could do that, and because there was plenty of land. A bit like, I suppose, what we led to believe is what happened in America, where the settlers come in and they just claim bits of land because it's so huge. The fact that there were Native Americans already there saying, well, hold on a second, this is ours, you keep out, and then of course, you know, suddenly people get greedy, is another thing entirely. But anyway, there we are. Land ownership, it is a very frustrating time when we have the system that we have, and the people who are there to help you do it, and you pay a lot of money for it in order to get the T's crossed and the I's dotted, or the other way around, is just frustrating. But anyway, there you go. That's where I am, and it's more frustrating now because I can't get my bloody router going. I'll have to go and get one of those plugs. Thank you for listening. Till next time, goodbye.